want us to turn to the 6th chapter of Isaiah. And we will read about the first 8 verses here, I believe. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had 6 wings. With 2 he covered his face, and with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. Now, we have various ideas, different ones do, of different things. And maybe we have different thoughts about the standards of Christian living. Our conceptions of truth may vary. It's certain that some have more light than others do, and some has more understanding of the Christian life than others do. We should surely respect that principle and that idea in our judgments one of another. And our conception of things depend mainly upon 2 conditions. First, the clearness of our vision of truth and duty. Second, the standard of measurement and comparison. We're living in a time, and maybe it's always been that way, but I live in this time, so I know how it is now, that it's pretty common practice for people to compare themselves among themselves and measure themselves by themselves. In doing that, the Apostle Paul said we were not wise. Why would that not be wise to do that? It's because we are not the ultimate standard. Christ is the standard, and he's the only one to measure by. But do you hear people sometimes say, well, I'm just as good as so-and-so, and they're recognized. They're supposed to be saved, and I'm just as good as they are, I know. Well, you're just measuring by the wrong standard there. By the wrong thing. Sometimes folks say, which is the worst, this or that? Well, it isn't a question with saints, or shouldn't be, of which is the worst, but which is the best. We should be reaching out for the best. And it isn't a question of whether this or that is the worst. Maybe neither one of them would be very good. We're measuring wrong when we look at things like that. Then he spoke about people measuring themselves by themselves. Now, how would that be that I measure myself by myself? Well, maybe I can take a little retrospective view and weigh things out and conclude that I'm a little better off now than I was 5 years ago. Well, maybe that isn't near well enough off yet. Just to be better off than I was 5 years ago or a year ago or something. It's encouraging to know that we're making some progress and that we have moved up a little, but that's no stopping place. But if I conclude that I have grown some, I've advanced some, I'm stronger, I'm better, I'm more improved in my spiritual life than I was a year ago, so that's satisfactory with me. I'm just going to camp right here where I am. I'm better than I used to be. That isn't wisdom either. That's not the way to do it. There is an ultimate. There is an absolute. We're living now in a time when, as far as the moral standards of the world are concerned, there are no absolutes. Everything is relative. Which is the worst, this or that? And for me to do this isn't any worse than for him to do that. And the world doesn't have any absolutes, but there is an absolute, and there is an ultimate, and that's what we're to measure by. That's what we're to build to, is that absolute. It's important that we develop more and more our clearness of vision, of truth and of duty, what our duty is, what the will of God is for us. People may understand a lot of truth and still not have very clear understanding of what the will of God is for their lives. But it's important that we develop that and increase and improve our vision, the clearness of our vision, of our duty, what the will of God is for our lives. Now, the more we live in God and unto God, the more our eyes become enlightened to behold the enormity and deformity of sin. If sin looks common to us and more or less something to be kind of winked and blinked at, and overlooked because it is common. And it's common practice. And everybody's doing it. If it kind of becomes acceptable to us, we're not close enough to God. The closer we are to God, we will recognize the hatefulness of evil in a very distinctive way. The lines of demarcation will be drawn more sharply in our thinking and in our lives. The more clearly we recognize the perfection of God's holiness, we will make it the pattern and model of our own holy living. As godliness increases, the sense of ungodliness becomes more acute. Walking in the light has a wonderful advantage for us. I recall one sister that she was holding out against a certain part of the standards that we believe in and the things that we teach. She just didn't see it. Said she couldn't see it. But she finally decided that the saints see it that way. They believe it that way and they practice it that way. And I ought to too. So she began to measure up on that line without any definite conviction. And after she did, I said, "Well, how do things appear to you now?" "Oh," she says, "I can see it now. It's all clear to me now. Just walking in the light made it clear to her." Measuring up, going through the door and looking at it from the other side. That made it appear in its true light to her. Now, as we become more godly, we become more deeply conscious of every ungodly thing about us. And we're not going to increase in light and in spiritual power and strength and in the grace of God only as we become more godly in our living. The holiness of God, that's the ultimate. That's the absolute. And that's the pattern that we should measure by. Brother S.T. Walker used to preach about people measuring. And he said some people are always measuring. But he said, to get anywhere, you have to measure and then cut. Now, I think that's a good thing for us to consider. As we measure, then cut. Just cut off. Separate out of our lives those things that would mar our godliness and our holiness. Now in this lesson that I read, we have a clear example of this. King Uzziah died this year, and we're all familiar with the conditions that surround the death of a national leader. Mr. Kennedy was assassinated. and it throwed the whole country in a dither. A national leader had gone down. Mr. Roosevelt died in office, and that necessitated changes. And threw things in another channel. These things have happened to us under our observation till we know the effect that a death of a national leader has. Uzziah was king, a national leader, and he died. It was bound to produce repercussions just like those that I've referred to with us in our own country. And Isaiah may have been affected by that. No doubt he was. Maybe he had this vision at King Uzziah's funeral. I don't know. But it was the year that King Uzziah died anyway. And he had a vision of the Lord. The glory of the Lord. The seraphims flying in the midst of heaven. Surrounding a throne high and lifted up. And the seraphim saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, the whole earth is full of His glory." Isaiah saw this. It had a profound effect on him. Had an effect on him that nothing else could have. When he saw this, he said, "Woe is me." He was looking at something now. He was comparing himself with something that he never had compared with before. Up to this time, we don't hear any remarks like this out of Isaiah. He is rather reproving and judging the children of Israel. He's a prophet of God. And he's pronouncing some pretty strong things against the children of Israel for their sins, upbraiding them for the condition that they're in. And no doubt as he walked among them and associated with them, he thought, "Well, I'm as good as the average, better than the most. The Lord selected me to be a prophet, and He wouldn't have done that if I hadn't been better than the rank and file of the people here." Maybe he felt like that. Perhaps he did. But when he got a direct look, a vision of the Lord, the King in His glory, it changed the whole picture for him. Herein is where the Apostle Paul said that people measuring themselves among themselves, or comparing themselves among themselves and measuring themselves by themselves, are not wise. Isaiah perhaps had been doing this very thing, feeling all right. But all the conviction of his undone condition struck him when he had a clear vision of the King in the glory. Then he said, "Woe is me. I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips." He had something to compare with now. He was looking at the ultimate. He was looking at the absolute. And comparing with that, him and all of his brethren looked different than they ever had before. "Woe is me. I'm a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For, that's an important word right here now. For, or because mine eyes have seen the King in the glory. That's the reason I can say that. That's the reason my understanding has been enlightened. It's because I got a vision of the Lord, the King in His glory. And as he looked at him, he judged all of his brethren and himself right by that. And as he judged by that standard, he was right in there with his brethren. I'm a man of unclean lips too. And I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. And as he confessed and acknowledged his true condition and his need, humbled his heart, the Lord respected him. And he said that one of the seraphims flew unto him, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar, and he laid it upon my mouth and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Now this was because Isaiah acknowledged his true condition and confessed his need. If people ever in this world get any help from God, they're going to have to humble their hearts and confess their needs. Be conscious of their needs. There are many people that need help, and they know they need help, but because they will not openly humble their hearts and confess their needs, they're not getting what they need. Isaiah got exactly what he needed because of the fact that he did humble his heart and acknowledge his true condition and confess his need. He couldn't have done this before because he didn't see it before. But the Lord had his way of getting it to him by just revealing his glory to him. Now we are told in God's Word, run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. Jesus is the ultimate and the absolute model for us now. I believe, in my praying, I often reiterate in my praying to God that I thank Him for the plan of salvation. I thank Him for Jesus, for His life, His death, and His shed blood. Now the life that Jesus lived was an important part of His mission here. While His mission here was a redemptive mission, and the shedding of His blood was the ultimate of that, yet His life was a very important part of His mission. I believe that Jesus came into this world and lived among men on the plane of a man in order to show us, set before us, the perfect example of a Christian life. And what Christian living is. Then I believe after this was done, and the teaching and setting up of the standards that we are to go by in this dispensation of time was accomplished, that He shed His blood in the end, that through our faith in the merits of His shed blood, a work could be accomplished in our hearts that would enable us to live that life and measure to that standard. Peter says in 1 Peter, the first chapter, in verse 22, For even hereunto were ye also called, for Christ suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in His steps. Live as He lived. don't know if you've ever read the little book. I have a time or two. Maybe I'll read it again. The title of it is What Would Jesus Do? Written by Mr. Sheldon. What would Jesus do? And a group of people in a church set out to measure everything in their lives by what they thought Jesus would do. Well, I don't know the setting of that story, and maybe it's just a story, but it's a good policy anyway. What would Jesus do? We have a song in our book entitled, What Would Jesus Do? And it says, always stop and think. Whatever's coming your way now, always stop and think, what would Jesus do? That ought to be the measurement that we'd measure all of our actions and all of our thoughts and all of our speakings and everything else, but what would Jesus do? What would Jesus say in this circumstance? How would he act? How would he feel? Judge our feelings, our attitudes, our dispositions, everything by the standard that's been set up for us. Even hereunto were ye also called, for Christ suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. This is his living, his way of living, his standard of life. He did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. If I follow that example, I'll have to do no sin. And I'll have to practice no guile. When he was reviled, he reviled not again. I'll have to leave off all the reviling if I follow that example. They may revile me, and they have at times, but I'll have to leave off my reviling. And when he was persecuted, he threatened not. I'll have to eliminate all the threatening out of my dealings with my fellow men. But committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. That's the pattern right there. That's the ultimate. That's absolute. I believe in absolutes. I believe in an absolute standard that doesn't involve any variating. I believe that the standard of the New Testament is fixed. The standard of the New Testament is based on walking in the light. What we would term as variation in the standard among the people may revert right back to the standard itself, walking in the light. Maybe they just don't have the same light that some of the rest have. But the Scripture says if we walk in the light as he is in the light, then we have fellowship one with another. That's the basis of fellowship, walking in the light, whether we have much light or little light. And the person with the greatest degree of light can have full, perfect fellowship with the person with the least degree of light if that person's walking in all the light he has, measuring up to all the truth that he knows and reaching out for more if his attitude's right. God responded to this man's confession of his need and sent him help. Then, after that was accomplished, and his iniquity was taken away and his sin purged, he heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall we send and who'll go for us? He hadn't heard that before. Perhaps the reason that some folks feel no call, hear no call, accept no responsibility, see no need in the work of God, is because they have not walked close enough to God. They have not had a good, clean, clear-cut vision of the King and His glory, and consequently have never just acknowledged their true condition and confessed their need and humbled their heart and received a purging from the Lord. This cured Isaiah's dullness of hearing. When this happened to him, he could hear the voice of the Lord. Now we have explained to us over in Matthew's gospel, I don't remember just the chapter and verse right now, but he's talking about the children of Israel and said they're dull of hearing and their eyes they have closed. They're blind, they're deaf. But why? The secret of it was, he said, this people's heart is waxed gross. It was heart trouble that they couldn't see and they couldn't hear. And when Isaiah got his heart trouble cured through the operation of the Spirit of God upon him, he could hear then. You and I can hear when we get rid of our hardness of heart. Now, he heard a voice, the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send? And who'll go for us? Then he said, here am I, Lord, send me. He's ready to go now. He saw the need. He had a burden for the need. He was ready to go. The transaction that had taken place between him and God, after he had had this vision and after he had humbled his heart and acknowledged his need and confessed before the Lord, and the Lord had purged his sin and removed his iniquity, then he heard the voice of the Lord and he was ready to go. He was ready to respond. A tenderness of heart will make you and me ready to respond to the call of Lord of the Lord to service. Now, we have here three distinct looks, and the order of them is important. The first was an upward look, the second an inward look, the third, an outward look. Get those in any other order than that, and it'll just work confusion. It'll not bring about any good results. Suppose I look in. I examine myself, but I haven't looked up. I don't have a proper vision of what to compare myself with. I can't judge myself right. If I look in before I look up, I'll miss the mark for sure. If I look out, a lot of people are looking out today, but they're not looking out for fields of service and things that they can do for the Lord and a place to fill in His work. They're looking out at people to criticize them and judge them and condemn them and justify themselves and by comparing themselves with what they see out there, and so on. But that's not the outlook we need. We need the outlook on a field, a needy field, and a place for us to serve in that field. Place for us to work, something we can accomplish in the service of the Lord. Now, remember, we can't properly judge ourselves till we have looked unto Jesus. He's our pattern. Measure by Him and cut by Him. And see how we fit. When we see the true life of Jesus set out and the true standard set up for holy living and for Christian standards in this age of time, measure by that. Lay yourself down on that and see how you fit. I've often thought, you know, the scripture says, remember the pit from which you were dug and the rock from whence you were hewn. And I've often thought that if we could just keep that in mind, that it would help us in our attitudes toward people and in dealing with people. Remember where God brought us from and how long it took Him to get us from where He brought us from to where we are now. And just consider how long suffering and forbearing and patient He's had to be with us and merciful to us in bringing us from where He found us to where He has brought us to now. It'll help us considerable in being merciful and long-suffering and patient and so on in our attitudes and dealings with our fellow men. Now He taught us to look unto Jesus, and I say that if we'll just get our eyes on Jesus and keep them there, we'll make it pretty good. We can judge ourselves right. He says, His Spirit beareth witness with our spirit that we're children of God. But suppose a person isn't a child of God, the Spirit of the Lord will be faithful to bear witness with His Spirit just how it is with him. Convict him of the fact that he is not a child of God. And if things are out of order in our lives and need putting in order, the Holy Spirit will contact our spirit and turn the light on in our soul and help us to search out all the inward parts of our hearts and of our lives, enable us to see the things that we need to adjust and what we need to do about them. Show us the way out of whatever trouble we're in. God has a way out of whatever trouble people get into if they'll just take God's way. The upward look, that's the first. That's important. Then the inward look. If you start looking out, soon as you've looked up, you'll start judging people. You'll see how short people are. But look in first. Judge yourself first. Then look out. Don't look out with an objective of judging, but look out with an objective of serving and helping people out of the trouble they're in. And the things that are short and lacking in their lives. The Lord said to me in plain words one time when I was meditating, He said, God sent not His Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through Him might be saved. Well, as I meditated on that particular thing after It was spoken to me. The Lord spoke to me again. He said, that's the way for you to preach. Don't preach to condemn folks. Preach to save people. Preach to show people the way out of the trouble they're in. And help them to the light. That's been quite a few years back, but by God's help and grace from that time till now, I've endeavored to preach the gospel just that way. With that objective, the preaching of the gospel might condemn people, and it will if they're not measured up to it, and if they don't have an attitude to measure up to it, it will condemn them, but God forbid that that would ever be my objective in preaching the gospel. My objective is to help people out of the trouble they're in. Show them the way out. If perchance I might save some. The order of our looking is very important. Up, then in, then out. And the outward look with the objective of seeing the field of service and a place for us to serve and to work. Bear in mind that our conception of things will depend mainly on the clearness of our vision of truth and duty and the standard of our measurement and comparison. And it's up to you and me to see to it that we measure by the right standard if we value our souls and have an intent to save our souls.